course, the first thing we did is like, let's figure out how to be good at video, because we knew that long term, that was going to be something we needed to do. People want to work at a place where they can actually believe that they're making a difference. But when you see the technology with virtual reality, you realize that this is something brand new to the world. It's not just a screen on your face. It actually transports you and immerses you into a completely different environment.
Perfect, Ryan. It's a pleasure to see you. I was one of the first, not one of the first, like I was buying very, very early from bodybuilding.com, and I saw the journey that you guys had through bodybuilding and then over the years through Black Box. And I was super excited to do this discussion. Why don't we start by walking us a bit, how did you start bodybuilding? I believe that you started selling creatine. Maybe walk us through that story. And then also, why did you start with creatine specifically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to talk about some of my favorite subjects. It kind of goes in order, like business, bottom.com, Black Box, and then talk about my kids. It's like after that. Don't tell them I said that. No, but honestly, you know, back in 1999, you know, we started bodybuilding.com. It was, you know, the beginning days of the internet and cyberspace. And, you know, you didn't really use the word e-commerce yet, but just got really excited about the idea of actually starting a business. I had just graduated high school in 1996 and it started already doing some little internet businesses and things like that. Some like informational reports or learning how to do search engine optimization before that was even a term, you know. So started selling creatine first. So at that time, creatine was brand new. It was a new product on the market. People didn't know what it was. It was just seemed like this really exciting new supplement that was safe, that could help improve strength, help improve muscle mass. And you could go to GNC, so one of the local stores here at the mall, and buy it for like $120 for a month's supply. And so, you know, very expensive, you know, even back then. And so it was like, all right, let's see if there's a way to like get this product at wholesale, be able to just put my own labels on it and ship it direct to consumers through the internet. And we were able to find a supplier and we were able to sell it for something like $50 for a month supply. So like much cheaper, and using a lot of the internet marketing techniques I'd started to learn that time, just put up a small little website just to see like what it could do. And, you know, at first not much really happened. And I kind of thought, okay, maybe this isn't going to work. And eventually it started to really pick up. And back then I could only accept orders by check or money order by mail, you know, so it's like much harder to accept credit cards and there was no PayPal type of thing. But eventually the orders started coming in. It was like the first day I went back after a little vacation to see if there's any orders at the PO box, you know, usually it was empty. This time there was like a big bag in the back of mail, you know? And so it was like something had clicked and finally, you know, we started getting orders. So just started shipping them out of the garage. That's when it was like, all right, maybe there's something exciting here. How can we take this to the next level? And I saw that the name bodybuilding.com was owned by somebody, but they weren't using it. So I emailed them a couple of times. I was like, hey, you know, this could be a really cool thing. If you're not using it, I'd like to buy it. And first of all, they said, no, we're going to use it eventually. But after about a year, they still weren't using it. So I went back to them again, like, hey, you know, let me know, like, I want to buy this. And they were finally like, all right, we're busy with other things. So how much? And went back and forth. And eventually they agreed on, you know, $20,000, and it was mine. And I remember like that moment, like just sitting in my house and seeing that email come through. And I was just like, yes, you know, like this could be a really good kickstart to a bigger vision of, you know, thousands of products and not just selling products, but also having community and content and creating this, like what we call like a super site, you know, of like everything you could need to get in shape and to reach your goals and to work out, you know, or to work with other people to stay accountable. And that's really what kicked it off. April 13th, 1999, the website went live.
And once these things happened, what did you do afterwards? Did you start adding more supplements or did you start with a marketing approach or was it like everything together?
It was everything together. We really had an idea of like, we wanted to, of course, get a lot more products. So that was a big part of it, and build out a store where, you know, had a lot of good information that would ship it very quickly. Great pricing, of course, all the basics. But, you know, back then, even shipping things, you know, be like, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, you'll get your order kind of thing. And so when we were able to get people's orders to them in like 3 to 5 days, because we would like ship it out like that day, you know, as fast as possible, they were surprised. And even doing things like customer ratings and things, that was an innovation where, you know, you would go to like a retail store and you trust the salesperson. And that was always, you know, obviously there's conflict of interest. Like, you know, are they really selling me the best product or the one they make the most money on? And so just the idea of being able to talk to other people and see what other people think about nutritional products was a big deal. And at the same time, putting out the content and content marketing, you know, it's funny. I feel like a super old man. You know, I'm 45. I'm not that old, but it's like now it's like obviously content marketing. But back then it wasn't a thing. And so creating content, creating articles, creating, you know, early videos, it really helped to bring people to the site, not just to buy products, but to get information on how to work out, how to diet, how to stay motivated, you know, what, you know, even information on products. And that also for a lot of people is a big innovation, because the only way you can get information like this before was through books or magazines, and to have that right there at your fingertips was very powerful. So the very first marketing technique by far for bodybuilding.com was just creating great content that was honest, truthful, and, you know, unbiased, that people could trust, and that they could find through search engines, of course, and that they could also share with their friends. And that really is what started to drive things, together with adding on things like message boards and community. You know, once again, social, a big thing, but back then it wasn't, but allowing people to come together, talk to each other, and have that type of forum really made a huge difference for us.
I think the whole industry before you started, it was a very non-transparent way of looking at supplements. Like most people, when I was asking about supplements and going to the stores, were basically described supplement as steroids. Whereas what I see from all your approach is that you gave so much transparency for people to understand. And you did that through content and so heavily. The ratings, you mentioned ratings, and I remember myself going into the ratings of the supplements. Like you had so many users giving their own ratings, giving their own reviews. That was so important. I literally think about myself doing it. And mm-hmm. I guess back, like we can see today and say, yeah, it's something obvious. But back in the day, there were no ratings. Like, how did you think about doing that? What gave you the idea?
You know, honestly, I built the website with our amazing team, by the way. It wasn't just me, even close, but we really led with the idea of we wanted to build something for ourselves. What did I want as an end user, right? Less about like, how do we just like make money and how do we like extract money from people and like, you know, build a big business and get rich. It really was, what do I want? Like, I remember being the 14-year-old kid going into the gym and feeling so unsure of myself, seeing the like big buff guy in the corner, wishing I can ask him a question, but being so intimidated and feeling just so dumb and insecure that I was like, you know, I'm going to make it now so that I can ask that person that question. I could be that 14-year-old kid and ask through these articles, you know, and get that content. Also, I really wanted to know about these products, creatine and, you know, pre-workouts and protein powders and what's the best ones. And it was very difficult to get real true information because once again, it's like you really were only talking to salespeople. So I really wanted to know about these products and really how they worked. And so it's like, I want to get as much information and build like a page for each product that told you all about it and be able to ask people about it. And it's interesting because it was very controversial in the beginning. It was very much like people would come to me that products we were selling, like, hey, we're selling this person's protein powder. And they would come to me enraged because on our forum, somebody said it tasted bad or it was a bad product or it didn't work, right? And that had never really been seen in the industry because before, all the promotion for the products were through salespeople at retail stores or through magazines that were accepting advertisements. So they didn't want to say anything bad. And it was almost the first time some of these executives and company owners could see right here on the product page or on this forum that somebody's saying something negative. And of course, the idea was, look, we want to be honest because we wanted to build a long-term business. We wanted to build something that was going to last and not something that was going to be short-term, just, you know, something that people eventually figured out was not real. And so, and I try to convince the vendors like of the same thing, like this is only going to make it better for everybody. And, you know, having some of those negative reviews also makes the positive reviews more powerful. And it also is good feedback for how to improve your product. So I think the short version is, I really looked at everything we did and said, what do I want? What would I truthfully recommend to my friends? And, you know, it's like, I would even like say in our mind, in our meetings, like, would you tell your mom this? You know, when your mom's coming and ask you a question, you know, hey, what workout should I do? What products should I buy? Would you like sell her? You need this one for $99 and we know it doesn't work, but we're going to get your money. Like, no, you would tell her the truth. And if we did that, that was going to help us have that long-term business. Honestly, if we help people to reach their goals and just stay on their fitness program, that's what's going to be the biggest difference for us because people are going to continue buying products. It's a very interesting industry. People buy products, they last for 30 days on average, and then they got to come back and buy it again. And if the product's not working, if they're not sticking to their program, if they're not seeing results, if they don't know what to do in the gym, they're not going to come back. And so we really did try as best we could to help people to reach their goals, which is going to help them to refer other people to us and help them to continue coming back and buying protein powder.
I think this helped to evolve a lot the industry in a way that the supplements themselves became so transparent. I remember the days that you had Jim Stoppani and Caged Muscle and like all these folks that actually started bringing formulas that were very transparent. I think all that content approach gave so much push into the industry to do it much better. So that was really, really crazy. I wanted to go into some of the specifics when it comes to your marketing approach, because I think that was such a strong point from bodybuilding. Another one, I think it was the culture, but I can touch a bit later on that. I remember those videos, first of all, that you are doing, the videos that I was literally waiting behind my PC for those 30 days for the videos to be released. I think the videos also were very, very early. How did you think about starting the videos and what was happening then?
You know, we were very excited when it was finally possible to do video on the internet, when people had fast enough internet connections and just, you know, the first versions of you know, Real Player, you know, type of technology. And so immediately, of course, the first thing we did is like, let's figure out how to be good at video, because we knew that long term, that was going to be something we needed to do. And so we started doing exercise guides. You know, that's a very obvious application for videos, like how to do different exercises. And we want to build the most thorough database. You used to have to buy, you know, CDs or VHSs in order to get that type of information, or hire a trainer. And so we just said, look, we're just going to start learning and figuring it out. Some of our early videos, you can see like some of our warehouse team on the side holding lights we got at Home Depot, and, you know, trying to like just figure it out. But of course, that's how you learn, and that's how you get better, is just by jumping in. And then it came down to, okay, what kind of content would you really want? And what we really found out is that people wanted a lot of handholding. You know, people wanted to know every detail. Like, you could give them a whole bunch of information about a workout program, and if there was one little piece that they were confused about, they just couldn't start. Like, I'm not really sure like what this part means, or how to do this exercise, or what's this rep scheme kind of thing. And it would kind of cause people to freeze up. So we went this extreme other direction where, look, every single day there's going to be a video. It's a 90-day trainer. Here's the goal. Here's what it's all about. And every day, day one, day two, day three, like up to day 90, there is a full video telling you every little tiny detail you could possibly want to know, hopefully in an entertaining, fun format. And people love that. People just love not having to leave the site. I always say, like, if people are on our site and they have to leave the site to go Google something because they didn't know what that was or how that worked, then we failed. We need everything right here and make it as easy as possible. So that was really the big focus with the videos.
How did you realize that people wanted so much handholding? Was it through analytics, for example, or how did you know?
There was some analytics, but, you know, we had a big forum. Our message boards are very popular back then. And so we got a lot of direct feedback. So, you know, we spent a lot of time meeting, you know, virtually with end users and getting their feedback. And I would spend a lot of time on the forums talking to people and really understanding the end user and the consumer. But one day kind of sticks out in my mind. We had Chris Gethin, actually, mentioned his Caged Muscle, his product.
I did all his workouts, all of them.
Yep. Yeah. He's a great guy. Very transparent, just very motivational. He actually, you know, he's from Wales. You know, we had met him when he lived in Los Angeles, but he actually moved here where we're at in Boise, Idaho, and now continues to live here. A good friend. We hired him as to help manage a lot of our content on the website. And we spent so much time and effort to put great content on the site, you know, different type of videos, different type of articles. And then I remember we would still have some of our own employees that would go directly to him. They'd go into his office to go ask him questions. And I'm like, we have this huge resource. It's all right there. Why aren't you using our own product? And they just wanted more information, more detail straight from him. So it's kind of cheesy looking back, but we literally did the first trainer with him of the video walks into the office and says, and he goes, oh, hey, you're here. Come on in. Let's talk about today. You know, like kind of cheesy, almost like Mr. Rogers style. But that's what we were trying to recreate, is that feeling of how do you have somebody you look up to and be able to have that one-on-one connection and get everything you could possibly want to know. So a lot of time spending with users, listening to users, and even our own employees.
I wrote, have a board here, and I wrote the marketing approach in the way that I understand it. The other couple of things I wanted to ask is, because you mentioned forum as well, how early did you start the forum? Was the first thing that you started to speak to the customers, or was it later?
It was almost right away. You know, it was very early versions of, you know, there used to be the bulletin board systems, which I really was into. That was my first like introduction to like internet communities, really old school stuff where you could, it just was mind blowing again that I could talk to somebody in Australia that had some great information and you could learn from that through these different mailing lists and stuff. And we said right away, we want to put up message boards. We want to get that discussion going. We want to be open and transparent with people. And so it was right from the beginning. And it was like, you know, trying to hold a tiger by its tail. It really did take off really fast. And all the things that we still deal with when it comes to social media, like dealing with trolls, dealing with people posting things they shouldn't, dealing with people arguing and fighting and, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff like that. That was the negative part of it that we had to manage, which made it so that a lot of people didn't want to have these social communities and these forums because of that. And we said, look, this is important to us. We're going to figure it out. And of course, you know, it's never perfect, but we're going to try our best to make this the best type of community we can. And it really was straight from the beginning. And like I said, we would get in lawsuits with our own vendors because they were mad about somebody posting something. And we'd have to do investigations of it. Do they work for some other company? And they're lying. But it turned out that they were just an end user trying to help other people. And I mean, I would get a lot of pushback sometimes from other people in the industry or other people in other industries and say, hey, are you sure this is important? And to me, it was very important and it was worth the effort.
How does someone start a forum? I spoke with the founder of MyFitnessPal one day and he was telling me that at the very early days, what you need to do is you have to be answering everything yourself. You have to be generating content from the beginning. Like, and at a certain point, this becomes something as a community. But how did you start the community by itself?
It was kind of like you said, you know, we had to be in there ourselves and answering questions and asking questions and trying to get people to create those discussions. And there's really no fast way because I've been asked that many times, you know, they call it the cold start problem. You know, like how do you create something from nothing and light that fire with the community? And it's one of the most difficult things. And I'm sure there's a lot that comes into it with, you know, with luck and timing, but we really just, we gave the tools, you know, we gave the ability for people to discuss these things with each other. And we spent a lot of time in those forums ourselves. And eventually people started raising their hands in the community saying, hey, I'd like to be a moderator. I like to lead different discussions and kind of volunteers. And we engaged with them and said, hey, that's, you know, we would love to have you do that. And really like a big part of community is engaging with those type of people, right? The 1% that really want to create content, that want to engage with other members, that want to help lead, help clean things up. Those people will be worth, you know, 100 times, you know, like another member that might just be not doing much. So I think a big part of it is really identifying those people and helping them to help you to make the community grow.
Something else I remember, if we go away from the forum, is I was going to these events that was done in NEC, that you were bringing so many athletes. I remember the first year I've been there, basically bodybuilding.com had a small booth, a few athletes. Second year I went there, like you had a massive booth, all of the famous athletes around, and I could go there. You were giving supplements and all of the great folks from the videos and all of that were there. So it was super fun to speak to them, super fun to learn a lot of things from them on the spot. How did you think about going to these events? And also, did they work at the end?
You know, it's always hard to quantify because, you know, a lot of, you know, our website would get, let's say, at certain points, like, you know, millions of visitors in one day. And then these events would obviously be relatively small compared to that and very expensive compared to that. But a big part of it was supporting the industry because a lot of these smaller like bodybuilding fitness shows, they needed support in order to support the athletes. And the athletes in these shows are the influencers in their communities. These are the people. There may only be, you know, say 50 of them on stage and, you know, not a huge audience at some of these smaller shows. Those are the trainers at their gyms. Those are the people that other people ask, what do you do? What products do you use? You know, where do you buy them? And for us to support them, you know, give them swag and stuff that they could wear back to the gym, that made a big difference. So a big part of it was really just like, let's be grassroots supporting those communities. And then going to some of the bigger events, there's kind of two reasons. One is the end user, of course, you know, the customer, people like you to come there and engage with athletes that they may have seen on the website, engage with the products, be able to try them out, you know, because it's something you need to try. Obviously, you can't lick your screen. We still don't have that, dang it, to be able to try this flavor. You know? So you have to actually try the samples. But So it helped a lot with building that. But a big part was also being there for our vendors, because we had, you know, hundreds of vendors that we were selling their products, and we were also working with their athletes, and we're also working with them to create content for our website. And being there and being kind of a leader in those type of events helped us to engage those partnerships. Vendors would come and say, okay, who do we want to work with? You know, one of our competitors that's not here, one of our competitors that might have a smaller booth over here, or bodybuilding.com that is at all the events. They got the biggest line, the biggest booth. And once again, the value of that couple of days was hard to measure when it came to like, oh, we got enough sales to offset the cost. It was more now we engaged those partnerships, we engaged with these athletes, and now we can do even more cool stuff going forward.
So it also helped from the supplier side for the vendors to actually see you there and create much, much better and stronger partnerships. Because I remember like Gaspari was there, like all of the folks were around. So I guess that was a very good face-to-face with these folks.
Exactly. Yeah. Of course, at the big events like the Olympia and the Arnold, everybody's there. That's where everybody has their meetings. But yeah, it's just, once again, you walk around these big events, you see the people that are being the movers and shakers, and you want to be part of that.
The next thing I remember regarding marketing, if we call it market, it's body space. Body space, I remember early days, I was using it so much. And you had like hundreds of thousands of people. I believe today it's millions of people in body space. How did you come with the idea? And how well did it do?
You really were a super fan. It's like you were engaged with every part of the company. So I'd like to shake your hand someday. Body space was a natural extension of forums and message boards. So early social media was forums, right? They didn't really call it social media back then, but like, you know, that was kind of the early version of it. And then people started wanting to have their own profiles. And it made a lot of sense in order to extend that to be, we called it body space actually kind of because of MySpace. You know, it was like kind of a riff on that, where it's like, look, on MySpace, you're going to be doing all those type of things, but you want to have this certain area where you can talk about fitness, where you can show your you know, your workouts, your stats, the things that you're doing. And of course, be able to go find other people that are doing similar things. I think my biggest belief about the fitness industry is that, and this goes into the black box stuff, I think my biggest belief about the fitness industry is that we don't lose most of our customers to other competitors. You know, it's easy to think like, oh, somebody stopped ordering from us, they must have went to, you know, GNC, or they're buying from Amazon, or if you're a gym, that they switch gyms. We lose most people to the couch. And we would always say by far that was our biggest competitor, is when you would call up these customers that have been ordering from us for years and they stopped ordering. And I'd say, what the heck, this person stopped ordering. And sometimes I would literally get on the phone and call them, go, hey, what's going on? Did you find a better price somewhere, or what, you know, a different supplier? And almost always they would just get very quiet and kind of like, actually, you know, I've been off my plan lately. I still have a whole bunch of protein in my pantry. Most people that start a fitness program don't stick to it. And so the biggest reason that we created the content was to help people know what they need to do and have that belief that it's going to work and that they can feel confident. All the testimonials of, you know, here's my story of how I transform myself. Here's what I do as a bodybuilder at my gym. And everything on the forum was to make it so that people would engage and stick with it long term. And body space was a natural extension of one of the number one ways that humans adhere to new things or start new habits is through their social communities, you know, the norms that are around them. Like we would notice it, like even in our own company, like kind of maybe skipping ahead to a couple of culture questions, people would join our company because, you know, they're interested in fitness, but maybe they weren't really like super fit people and, you know, fitness type of person, but we needed this kind of skill set. And, you know, I'd meet them, they'd start 90 days later, we'd be at some company event and they'd say, I have to tell you, I've lost 35 pounds and I feel the best I've ever felt. And I almost did on accident, just being around people that have jugs of water with them, that are talking about fitness, that are not doing some of these negative habits. That would be the thing that would actually get them to just naturally start to change. And the opposite of true is true, of course, too. Studies have shown like if you start to hang around people that smoke, you're more likely to smoke, or hang around obese people, you're more likely to become obese. And body space was really a way to say, look, let's create these communities of people that can come together, create those norms, to create that accountability, to create the inspiration that will make it so that you will naturally want to be part of that group and naturally do the things you need to do to succeed.
That's incredible. It reminds me like good universities, for example. Like you go to a very good university and the people around you are so smart that you want to be smarter. Like you read more, you study more, and you're trying more. And it's like great businesses as well. As long as great people are around, then you want to do better. That's extremely interesting as an insight. It's extremely interesting.
I mean, it's probably one of the key insights of human psychology is that we become like the people around us. And it's very difficult. You know, you have to insert yourself into the right communities, because if you don't, you know, you're going to slowly go in the wrong direction. And like you were saying, like when you're in a good, you know, educational community, you want to live up to that. But there's also a major subconscious part of it where you're not even realizing that you're doing small little habits. And as we also know, like most of life is not about these grand big things that you do, but it's those daily habits that you do over and over. And they could be really small things. Like you could become obese by eating 100 extra calories per day, which is like 2 extra bites of something, right? When you think about, oh, somebody like gained a lot of weight, oh, they must have just been like just eating nonstop donuts and fast food. But it could literally just be that they just had a few extra chips every day, 100 extra calories, 35 days, they're gaining 1 pound per day, you know, 10 pounds per year or 1 pound per month, sorry, 10 pounds per year. Approximately. And then, you know, 4 or 5 years, they've gained 40 or 50 pounds, not because they just jumped off the deep end and said, screw it, I'm just going to eat nonstop junk. It's just those little tiny bit extra. So when you're around people that are reading just a little bit more, working out a little bit more, eating a little bit better, subconsciously, you'll just do those smaller habits that can actually add up to be a really big life change over time.
I think this is a very good segue to speak a bit about culture. I've seen a lot of people who have been speaking about bodybuilding.com having a gym around the office. I saw videos of you training with some of these folks in that gym. How did you come with the idea of actually having a gym around?
You know, it's when you're authentic about what you're doing, you know, we authentically are trying to help people reach our health, fitness, and appearance goals through information, motivation, supplementation, you know, our mission statement. You know, every company has a mission statement. Every company says they're trying to do the right things. And a lot of them are, but we all know, right? Like most companies say one thing, do something else. It's, you know, they say that they are trying to help change the world or be great for the whatever end consumer that they have. But when they make decisions, even small ones, it's what's best for the company, what's going to make the most money. You know, how, you know, this is going to save us a little bit of money, so we're going to cut this thing out. And people really see those actions, and people want to work at a place where they can actually believe that they're making a difference and that they're not just working for a corporation or increasing shareholder value or, you know, capitalism kind of thing. And so we authentically cared about helping people because, once again, we were building the thing we wanted for ourselves, which ends up just being the thing that also helped us to grow the fastest. And so putting a gym in the actual headquarters was a big part of that. And by the way, the gym was on the first floor, the first thing you saw when you walked in, right? You walked in this lobby. Our mission statement was like huge over on this side, and every one of our employees signed it, you know, like in marker, you know, so they walk in every day, see their signature right next to the mission statement. And then right behind the front desk, you could see right into a big gym and seeing people working out. And that was like the first thing you saw every single day. And so if you're going in to walk into, you know, go upstairs and go to your office or wherever you're going, you are walking past that gym. And on purpose, we did it. We wanted it to be very visible because we wanted people to use it. And we wanted people to know, like, it's something that's important to us. We would go and visit companies. You make me have a lot of memories here. And they would say, yeah, we have a gym. We really care. And then you would get there and it was like in some closet in the basement. It was like an old broken down
two machines
kind of thing. And nobody ever in there. And we said, look, you can work out anytime you want. Like, this is part of your job. You know, you do not have to feel like you're taking a break or that you're like not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Like, the gym is right there. Like, we really want you to use it. We'd have transformation programs for our own team members and, you know, seminars and all that. And of course, it's another exciting thing about it was that it was different departments coming together. Because another thing that can happen in companies is customer service is over there. You know, this marketing group is over here and nobody ever talks to each other. Or there's, you know, there could be like kind of class warfare in a way, like which, you know, parts are better. This was a great way for us to come together. And like, you're working out, you know, me, the CEO, working out right next to you, or some, you know, our director of marketing working out with somebody here, or customer service reps working out all together. And then those natural conversations, those natural relationships happen that help create that culture and help people to stay long-term with a company is also a major part of building a great culture. Is you can't have people coming in and out all the time. You want to build people that are there for the long-term and create those relationships.
Ryan, this is very philosophical. Did you learn this over time through your experience with bodybuilding, or does this come from something else?
That's a good question. I didn't have a lot of mentors growing up, so I had a lot of books. You know? So like always on my desk are like the latest books that I'm reading or that I'm focused on, you know, so it's, I'm a big reader, you know, really, you know, I guess maybe, you know, coming up without ever knowing another CEO or having a mentor and being insecure about that, I really led, I really was attracted to books because I could learn so much and build that confidence. And so a whole bunch of it came down to, I didn't want to just read the basics. You know, I really want to understand it at a deep level because that was going to help me to be able to make better decisions and help lead our team. So I think the answer would be most of it came from just deep reading and focus over now 25 years.
You know, I remember I was listening to an interview from Chris Gethering, and he mentioned that you influenced everybody in the company to start reading. And he was mentioning, I still remember that. What three books would you say are your favorites?
You know, it changes all the time, but I'd say a couple big ones. One that everybody's heard of, How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's, you know, it sounds kind of like a basic book, but there's the insights there into relationships and human psychology are just very critical to the point where I want to read it at least every couple of years as reminders. I read quite a lot on behavioral psychology. I'm not sure if I have a certain favorite book on that, but a lot of it was around, you know, how people really think and how all the biases, like it's very popular in books now, is like how we think and how we don't even realize why we're making certain decisions like that. You know, a big focus on how innovation starts. So, you know, one book I have right here is, you know, the popular Diffusion of Innovations, which is the one where it talks about early adopters and laggards and like, how do new innovations actually diffuse? It's one of the hardest things also to do is to create something new and have it actually become accepted by mainstream, which it's one of the hardest things to do in business. So I'd say that's a big one. It's hard to say like actual favorites. I have so many of them, you know. Maybe after this, I can send you a list of like top 10 and we can put it out like on show notes. But I'd also say yeah. I'm also on Goodreads. So if you go to goodreads.com and search for my name, every single book I've ever read, I track it on there, mostly to keep myself accountable to my reading goals, because now I've told you and others that it's out there. So I make sure that I actually stick to that. But I rate everything by star rating, how much reviews there. You can go and see different type of categories.
I do the same. Goodreads is like, it's fantastic as a reminder and to share with other people as well. And they see your reviews too. That's awesome. Last question I wanted to ask about bodybuilding.com is, it's the why sell. What was your thinking behind selling bodybuilding.com?
So, you know, growing up with nothing, you know, my with a single mom, that was a checker at a grocery store. The goal, of course, of starting a business, there's a big part of it that's like, this potentially could be something that can help me to, you know, eventually have freedom where I'm not so worried about just, you know, day-to-day living. And once bodybuilding.com started to take off, like it was all, put all the money back into the business, like almost the whole time, right? Eventually I could start taking a salary type of thing, but it was always putting money back in. So eventually it got to a point where it's like, hey, we started getting people coming to us saying, hey, we'd like to buy this. And this was a world I wasn't familiar with, but people that were like investment bankers or private equity firms started reaching out. And so it was like, all right, maybe there's a way here to take a little bit off the table while continuing to run the company. And that's basically what we did at first, is we sold a chunk to a private equity group out of Pennsylvania, which was a great actually experience because I learned a lot, you know, of going through that, like through due diligence processes and really them asking me questions of things I never even thought about before, and meeting so many great people. So it really did help me to learn and become a better business person and have a little bit more of a network that I could lean on. Then eventually around 2015, that's when I had decided to step down from bodybuilding.com. I've been running it like 17 years approximately, and it was, you know, internet business 24/7, 365. And I did start to get a little bit burnt out, only around the wanting to build more innovative type products and go to the next level. And we'd kind of got to such a big point where there was less time for innovation and more, you know, management and daily execution. And I figured it was time to give a chance for somebody else to do something. So sold the rest of my shares to Liberty Media, who had owned us at the time. And, you know, they took over, and it was a nice clean break, and positive. And it was a really weird feeling coming home the next day and like all the stuff I've been worried about for, you know, every single day since I was a teenager, all of a sudden I didn't have to worry about, you know, and it was very nice. But then I got bored.
I was walking one day in San Francisco and I saw Black Box VR. And it kind of reminded me of one announcement I saw that you were starting Black Box, and I realized that that this is the next thing. So what made you start? Why the world of metaverse? What made you start that business?
So as I mentioned, you know, retired in November 2015, and thought I could take a couple of years off and, you know, at least relax a little bit or travel, and did that for about 6 months, but got very bored, you know, I mentioned, and also got almost depressed, you know, where it's like not as much of a purpose or things to focus on, you know, no reason to read books or to improve. And so I was like, all right, I got to get back into this, and which was the ultimate goal. So with my co-founder, Preston Lewis, who had worked with me for many years at bottomin.com on innovation products and marketing, we said, let's go see this new thing, virtual reality. There's something there. It, you know, we just heard about Palmer Luckey, Oculus. They just sold to Facebook for like $2 billion. We've been playing around with some of the early devices, just thinking, is there a way to use some of this stuff for bodybuilding.com and help with some of our goals? And it felt like the early days of the internet, where it was like this new magical technology that nobody seemed to understand. And people thought it was a fad, like even early days of bottomin.com, it was like, what's this, you know, the cyberspace thing? And like, why would anybody use a credit card on the internet and, you know, all that stuff? And of course, you know, I remember like arguing with people because they thought it was just this fad, and it just, people didn't really understand it. But when you see the technology with virtual reality, you realize that this is something brand new to the world. This is a new medium, potentially the final medium, maybe before brain computer interfaces. But it's not just a screen on your face. It actually transports you and immerses you into a completely different environment, which it turns out that does some really crazy things to your brain, because we didn't evolve for us to see and hear and move around in an environment that's not real. So our brain really thinks it's real. It's almost like this mini placebo effect. And it creates all this great, these new things that you can do. So we looked at it and said, how can we use this new technology of VR to help with that problem, which is adherence? The biggest problem in the fitness industry by far is adherence. That's why every gym has to put you on a contract you can't get out of, because they know everyone's going to be there January 1st and January 14th, they're all going to be gone and nobody's reaching their goals. You know, it's like, it used to be a joke in like, you know, the industry is like the New Year's resolutionaries are coming. They're all going to be here January 1st, but don't worry, they'll be gone in a couple of weeks and the machines will be free. Yep. Again, which we all laugh about it, right? And we've all been through it ourselves, but it's like this crazy societal problem. The best scientists in the world have not figured out how to crack. How do you make it so people adhere to a fitness program? You know, 87% of people cannot adhere to a fitness program over even a short term. You know, they can do it for a few weeks, sometimes a few months, but almost everybody stops. And if you don't adhere to your program, doesn't matter what you're doing, it's not going to work. And that's why, you know, more people are overweight and obese than ever, have more metabolic diseases and problems and mental health problems that come from that. So it's a long way of saying there's something that needs to be solved here. And this new technology of VR, together with the principles of true gamification, video games could actually be the thing that could help people to create the habit of exercise.
I was speaking last time with the founder of Zwift, and they grew so much in this space that they got millions of customers, like everybody speaking about them, a lot of athletes are around. So there is something coming up for people that are not into the space that nobody is looking at, which is, makes it very, very interesting. Now you took a much more difficult approach, because from a bike, you can measure the data, but creating gym equipment, it's such more of a difficult approach. And I was looking recently at an interview of you speaking how you created the first machine and all the difficulties and all that. Can we get an idea of that? Like, what did it really take to build the first equipment to have in a VR gym?
So that's a great question. I think, first of all, to be an entrepreneur, you have to be a naive optimist and think that can't be that hard. Almost every single thing I've ever done, you know, obviously as a team, has been way more difficult than I ever thought at first. You know, and I even tell myself that I'm sure there's a bunch of things that are difficult, but it can't be that hard. We can figure it out. And then once you've kind of started, you've gotten so far, then you kind of have to figure out the rest of it. And you kind of go through that U, right? It's like, oh, it's going to be really easy, this product. And then you're going, you know, now you're at the bottom and we're never going to figure this out. It's impossible. And then it gets back to the other side. And then you look back and you're like, oh yeah, that wasn't that difficult, you know, but in the middle is the hard part. That's kind of how it came with almost everything we've done with Black Box VR. I was like, all right, it can't be that hard to create a video game, right? It can't be that hard to use VR technology in order to do some of these things we want to do. We really wanted to have resistance training because two reasons. One, we're really big believers in resistance training for overall health and fitness, you know, not just for building muscle, but for life and for everyone. And it's something that everybody needs and that they're not doing. And so how can we actually bring that into VR? And then also, how do we build a competitive moat? We didn't want to just create like kind of an exercise app where you're jumping around in VR, because even if it was successful, it might not be successful long-term because easy to copy. It's kind of like if you're creating like a calorie counting app, you know, like the first ones in the app store were very innovative. Now it's like there's millions of them, you know, and it's very difficult to maintain anything, any kind of moat there. So we said, this will be it. And we're going to go and figure out how to like integrate dumbbells, you know, like how do you get dumbbells just into VR? And it's like, all right, we actually hooked like a controller, you know, like a VR controller, just actually like Velcroed it to a dumbbell and then started just like, what's it feel like to actually like have resistance in there? And of course, you know, you're dropping it, it's dangerous. It could actually, you know, you can't change the resistance. And we started looking at other type of cable machines and say, what could we use? But then it was like, man, we got to create our own. And electronic resistance wasn't really a big thing. Now Tonal, you know, is out there and other ones, but this new kind of thing also came out where, hey, there's this electromagnetic servo motors where we can actually make it so that we can deliver resistance into VR controlled by the game engine in real time with like really high fidelity. We could change it like 0.001 pounds, you know, kind of resistance in real time, like throughout a rep, up to really heavy, like 250 pounds per rep. And so we said, let's go figure this out. And, you know, years and years, of course, of iterating has got us to a place where now it's a single exercise machine that can do pretty much every exercise, full body type of exercises that you can want to do, like squats, deadlifts, overhead press, standing row, chest press, you know, lat pull downs, bicep curls. You know, there's so many different things you could do with one machine that's robotically changes where the handle positions are, so you don't have to actually take yourself out of VR. Because that was another big part of it, is the value of VR is the immersion. And if you're always having to take the headset off and change a cable or change a position, you're going to lose that immersion of that, of being in this game and engaged in this flow state. So that machine really had to be as automated as possible. And so that was really where it came from. And lots of years later, we're finally at a good spot.
That requires so much innovation when it comes from the hardware perspective, but also from the software. Because the first thing that came to mind is like, you develop that from the hardware perspective, but how are you thinking about developing the software, and what can I do today? Like, what is my experience today as a user?
So right now it's a physical gym. So we have two locations open right now, one in San Francisco, right across from Twitter on Market Street, and then one here in Boise, Idaho. And it's basically a gym, kind of a typical fitness boutique type of gym where you have a membership, you schedule your workout in our app, go in, there's all these private booths. So you're in booth number 4 today. You go into this private booth, you put on the headset, that's where the machine is. And then you play a 30-minute intense esports style battle, basically, where you're taking your actual physical strength, like how strong you are with chest press, and doing exercises, doing chest press. Every time you're doing a rep, you're firing, you know, like a fire beam or projectiles and out onto the field in order to compete, and doing other things like cardio type of experiences, like punching, slicing, jumping, where you're actually doing that in order to build these little characters out there too. So the basic idea is it's kind of like Clash Royale. It's kind of like League of Legends. It's these esports style games, game, which is great because it's infinitely replayable. You know, like I would say like the game of basketball, it's the same game, same rules, same setup, but it's different every single time you play it. Same with like poker, same with, you know, Fortnite, in a lot of ways. And so it makes it so you can go in there and you're actually 30 minutes. You're going against either, you know, a computer controlled player, you know, eventually will go against other players, and they are trying to destroy your crystal that's right here in front of you. You're in this huge stadium and you're trying to destroy theirs. Whoever destroys it first gets the points. So you're doing things like attacking, you know, this side, and then strategically putting out these characters. This one's an archer, this one's flying. You need to use this type of element in order to compete against this type of thing. So it's like you're doing a full body exercise program. And we have made it so that it pushes you to your limit every single time. And that's why it can be 30 minutes and get a lot of volume in that time. We want you to go to failure, you know, around 12 to 15 reps. We're automatically progressing you because we can measure 50,000 data points for every one of your workouts and use machine learning and AI in order to say, okay, here's where you are now. We're going to slowly progress you up to what you can do, because a lot of people at the gym don't progress. They use the same thing all the time, and that's not going to do anything. But they don't have to think about that. Now you just got a little bit stronger. So now your chest press is more powerful, and now you can compete and do better in the game and move up even faster. And that's kind of the basics. There's so many other fun things, like you can use different power-ups and different type of other abilities. You can upgrade things. You can unlock things over time. But that's really the fun part of it, together with...
Is it a linear progression when it comes to the weight I'm lifting? Or is it that you are using some of my data, such as my heart rate or my respiration or something like this?
It's almost all based on what you can do from a resistance training perspective. So we're motivating you to do as many reps as you can with good form, because we could also track form. That's the other cool thing about VR. It's like you're in, we call it 6 degrees of freedom, where you can move in all different directions, and we can measure all that stuff in 3D. So we can know even, like, you know, wrist, you know, what position your wrist is in, and how fast you're moving everything, and like how far you're moving. So we can do all that kind of stuff, which allows us to measure the form, make sure you're doing it correctly. And then number two is we know exactly how many reps you did, how much work you did in foot pounds, for example, how the power you use. That allows us then to say, okay, let's use some algorithms here to say, okay, do we think they can go up? And once again, we don't have to jump you like a dumbbell, like from 30 pounds to 35, maybe. We can jump you from 30 pounds to 30.1 if we want to, but like maybe 31.2. And we could also go down, like if we notice that like you might need to be eased a little bit. So it's mostly based on that, together with how well you do at the game. And that's part of the other part with like the cardio aspect, because if you get too tired, you're not going to be able to do as much activity, and then you might lose this next battle. And so if you win, it gets more difficult the next battle, and you earn other rewards. And if you lose, you either stay there or you go down a little bit. So in all these different ways, we're measuring everything, your strength, your endurance, your speed, your power, as well as your gameplay strategy. And putting all those things together just kind of get you to where you need to be.
That, from a product perspective, that makes the complexity even much more, because like you build the hardware at the beginning, then you did the game and the software, but then you also need all the expertise from the fitness standpoint. How many people are you today?
We have about 30 people in the company. And you know, Preston and I really spend most of the time on you know, the product design, together with our dev team. You know, we've got like 10 people in the dev team split between our companion app on mobile, our VR app, and we have hardware engineers and QA. So it's a relatively small team. And so we ask a lot of our team. But what's exciting is, like, because we're small, we can like move fast, we can iterate quickly. But you're right, it's very complex and in some ways. And I think the biggest thing is there's not a lot of people that are working on high tech stuff together with fitness stuff. It's kind of, the cliche is kind of true. Like, fitness people usually aren't as high tech. High tech people usually don't understand fitness as much. And we go to these different conventions, you see the difference. So it's kind of this magic spot that I've always been in and our team has been in, where like we're combining the two, which it makes it so we can create a product that's very unique, but it makes it so we have a better competitive moat long term.
Yeah. You mentioned competitive mode a few times. It sounds like it's very difficult for anybody to compete, really, because of all these complex things that they need to build up front. So that's very, very interesting. The difficulty that sounds is like, how do you make it easy for a customer to use it for the first time? What's the approach there?
Yeah, great question. I think, first of all, on the competitive mode, I do say that a lot. That's a good point. Because I used to always say at bottom.com, like, commodity was actually a four-letter word. Like, when you're a product that is the same as everybody else, you know, if you look at an advertisement or you look at a product and you could just cover our logo and you could put someone else's logo, then, you know, you have something that's just easily copied. Or if you're just doing what everybody else is doing, of course. And, you know, the question we'd always ask ourselves is like, okay, let's just say bottom.com just disappeared today. Would anybody be mad? You know, because there's so many parts of our life where, like, let's just say I went to go to my favorite sandwich shop down the road and like, oh, it closed down. Bummer, I'll go to this one, or the grocery store, or the dry cleaner. Most things you can easily just switch and it wouldn't affect your life. But there's certain products that are so valuable and so unique that you would be devastated. You know, like for a lot of people, it's Apple products, right? Or things like that. So that's always how we try to think about it. It's like, how do we build something that is going to not just be a commodity, a me too product, but it's going to be so unique, which is the most difficult thing to do it once again, but it's worth it because it gives you that competitive moat long term, where it's not just, oh, we just did this thing that everybody could do, and now somebody else did it, and now we're just at the same playing field and we're kind of playing that game. So that's a big, big part of the way we think. I think from the complexity side, there's a lot we can learn from video games. Video games are great at onboarding, right? Like, you go and you start a new video game. And like a good example would be like Super Mario Brothers, like the very first one on Nintendo. And you start and there's nothing to do except for run one way or the other. And if you run to the left, you just hit a wall. So, okay, can't do that. So it taught you run that way. You know, first thing you're learning is run to the right. Then you keep running, and you hit this mushroom and then you die. Okay, that's weird. All right, what do I do now? Jump. And then, oh, I jumped on him. Oh, I got that. You know, and it's like games are really good about just slowly introducing you to new concepts, even to the point where you can't pass a certain level until you master some certain thing. And then it gives you this new capability. So you're constantly scaffolding, kind of, you know, learning new capabilities, which is how we learn, right? We start with the basics. Like if you even think of like from a job or from like a toddler, you can't, you know, teach a toddler to do a backflip. You have to teach them first to walk and then go upstairs and then to jump. And you take it, if you try to teach them to backflip the first day, it's going to be miserable for everybody. So video games are very good about slowly unlocking things, slowly increasing the complexity if they're designed well. So that's basically what we've done is the first versions of our game, you're in onboarding, you're learning just how to interact in VR. The very first thing you do in our game in the first onboarding is just walk around and touch things like, oh, hey, you're here in the metaverse. Let's see if your body came through okay. Walk around and touch these little buttons because a lot of people in VR just stand there and don't move or they try to reach. And I'm like, you can walk, you know? So we teach them, go walk. Okay, now I know I can move around and I'm in this amount of space. Next thing is the next thing. And then of course the exercise. And then we're teaching them how to do that. And then also measuring. We got to figure out how strong are you for like a starter kind of level. So let's kind of gamify. Let's learn this new thing. All right, let's do a couple more of those things. And that's going to slowly unlock new things. And that can go on forever. That's the fun thing too, is you can constantly be unlocking new things. Once you're at a really far level in a certain game, you can then unlock some new area that is only for advanced players or some new currency or some new type of mechanic. So that's, I like to give you the long answers to everything, but that's kind of what it is.
That's incredible though. I was thinking it from a product perspective of building a product. And when you overwhelm a user with too many options and they see it for the first time, then you have too much churn. But if you make it super simple, I literally have a product in my mind that it was super simple at the beginning to start using. I couldn't do anything but just two things. But then over time, I learned it and they incorporated more and more things to do. So it's very interesting to think of it in this way. Would you say it's the same when with hiring, for example, when someone joins Blackbox today and they're very early in their career, would you give them less responsibilities so they pick it up faster? Or how is your approach?
It's different for different type of positions, of course. Some is more rote training kind of stuff and learning management type of stuff. But like from a software developer, you know, software is complex and we have a whole bunch of stuff all over the place, of course. And so it takes a while. So almost always it is exactly that. Let's get you onboarded with like, here's the tools that we use. Let's, you know, meet the team, the normal kind of stuff. We do new hire orientation. You know, that's something I've always done, even at bottom.com. It's like everybody's going to have a full presentation about what our company is, why we're doing this, our history, what we care about, what our future is, in order to like kind of level set, kind of like what the context is of what we're doing. Then it's going to be small things like, okay, you're just going to fix this small little bug in this small little area. And then maybe you'll do a few bigger bugs in some other areas, kind of like to like kind of ease you into it before we just say, all right, you need to go and build this brand new feature on top of this complex system, you know, that's that has tech debt in these areas and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of people don't think that way. Also, even with startups, it's easy to forget all those things. And it's definitely time consuming to do like new hire orientation, you know, and every single time we get new people, it's like, we're going to go through that. But even at bottom.com every 2 weeks, you know, cause we'd have a lot of new customer service people and stuff like that. Every 2 weeks, you're going to, I'm going to go downstairs. I'm going to give a presentation and answer questions because and a lot of times would not be in the mood, you know, to do it again. And I have a million things going on, but like that type of habit is critical.
Does anybody need to participate in these ones, or is everybody that is new to the company?
Everybody that's new. Yep. Yeah. And people are welcome to come back and watch it again. And we do a lot of VR meetings, you know, which is kind of fun. It's like, you know, obviously, this is the Quest Pro. And so we'll do actual VR meetings where that's what we do our new hire orientation now. It's like we can be in the same room all together through VR with our avatars. And you can still hear my voice, see my mannerisms, even see my facial expression. And it's kind of amazing how much more that makes you feel like you're together with somebody versus even a Zoom call. And so that's been a critical part of it too. But people can also watch in by video if they want to.
Hmm. How many things from the culture of bodybuilding.com do you have today in Blackbox VR? And maybe what things are different?
There's a lot that's the same. We try to do, you know, big focus on learning and reading and communication and mission, you know, reminding about the mission, reminding about the why of what we're doing. a bunch of things I mentioned on this meeting, but the things that are different is as a smaller company, there's some things you can't do. Like, you know, when we had 800 employees, it's a totally different type of way to manage and to communicate than when you're at 30. And that's a really was a big struggle for me, even with bottomout.com, because it's like, you know, when you're in the garage, you're just talking to each other, you know, your chairs are hitting each other when you're moving and you can stay connected. And then you get a little bit bigger and it's a little bit more difficult. And every step, you know, hit 50 people, all of a sudden the way you communicate has to change because you're not just talking to everybody every day. And then you hit like 100 people and it has to change. And if you don't change, then people are not going to know what's going on in the company. And then you're going to run into all sorts of downstream effects that comes from. So I'd say the differences from what we're doing now really come down to the size of the company and the stage of the company. But it's very similar. Statement. It's mission focusing.
Yeah. Got it. Last question, Ryan, I wanted to ask you, what should we expect by next year from Black Fox VR? And what about 5 years down the line?
So our goal right now, as I mentioned, we have two gyms open and we've basically just been using these gyms to learn, to, you know, have a, to build a product, of course, and to get it to where it needs to be. And there's so many aspects of it that that's a big project. The next step is to do our first franchise test location because we want to scale through franchising. It's a great way to scale fitness concepts, as we know, like if a concept takes off like F45 or Orange Theory, those things can just grow really fast. And it's still going to be location based because the machines are expensive. So we want to, you know, we're not ready for like a home version of it quite yet. So I'd say the first thing that I hope is in a year, next time we talk, that we will have franchise locations open. And of course, opening a franchise, you know, being a franchisor is a whole different business than just running your own independent places. So really become an expert, you know, on franchising, getting all that stuff set up. There's a whole bunch of legal stuff you have to do to be a franchisor and state registrations and all that stuff. But the biggest thing is you have to build a turnkey system that anybody can run without day-to-day handholding, of course, and a lucrative system, obviously, that makes so people can have ROI on their investment. So that's a big part of it is I hope that in a year from now, we've got franchisees that are successfully opened in the market that's allowing us to bring this to more people that need it and then continue to grow that over those next few years. And then in 5 years, you know, hopefully we have, you know, hundreds of locations, if not like 500 locations open. And then also a good progress on either we've released an at-home version, kind of a smaller version of the machine, because by then VR and VR fitness will be a much bigger thing. You know, Apple is releasing their headset very soon. And it's continued research and development is going there. That's going to continue to grow, especially with all the new AI stuff that enables that. So we hope that there's going to be a moment that the market is ready to say, okay, I've got VR at home. I have my VR room. I'm comfortable with it. Now I want to add on exercise. People are already doing that today in cardio type games. Now I want to add on resistance training and a much bigger, more exciting kind of fitness routine to home while continuing to grow our franchises.
Incredible. Ryan, our next meeting probably is going to be through VR. It's going to be through the gym.
Right.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you.